Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Full Stack Leader. We're excited to have Fawad Dabiri with us this week. He is a senior manager in machine learning engineering at Twitter. And in the past, he has been a CEO, a CTO at companies like Wanda and Ankaverse. We're really excited to have you here. Welcome, Fawad.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we have so many great questions for you. Being a leader in the world of ML, there's a lot of people interested in this area right now and kind of working through some of the challenges, both on the technical side and even the philosophical side. There's a lot of good spots to talk about.
Certainly, looking forward to it.
Great. Why don't you give us a little background on how you got to where you're at now?
Sure thing. So let me start by talking about my graduate studies. I went to UCLA for my PhD in computer science.
Awesome.
During that time, my focus was computer science theory and algorithm design. And one thing that we did at UCLA was, while we were working on theoretical aspects of computer science and algorithm design, one objective we had was to ensure that we find real applications and apply those learnings into real applications. So I started working on healthcare application at UCLA, because there are great both nursing schools and medical schools down there. And we started working with those colleagues and finding real healthcare applications and how computer science, machine learning, and algorithm can help. After graduation, I started working at a startup, not in healthcare, but in the contextual text processing. So it's still exciting domain in how to understand and interpret intent from contextual text. Shortly afterwards, I joined Google as a software engineer. I was in the search ads quality, which again, the fundamental problems were quite similar. Then in 2014, the research that we had done at UCLA, which I had remained involved with, led to some interesting and impactful results. At that point, we decided that we build a company around it. And that's how Wanda was born. Wanda was a healthcare AI startup with the mission to utilize information we can collect from individuals remotely and use that information to predict adverse events that they might be experiencing in the near future. Let me give you a tangible example. For instance, one of our main application areas was in CHF or congestive heart failure. What we did was to collect very simple, non-invasive data points from patients at home, patients who had CHF, and then use that to predict whether they are likely to experience an adverse event in the next 7 days or not. And we would provide that information to the care team, and they would intervene in time to avoid those adverse events. So that was the premise of the company.
Yeah, real quick on that front, that's obviously a huge area for machine learning right now and looking at how you can do those kind of predictions with simple sets of data. I noticed one of the things you said was, it sounded like it was very basic levels of data you were able to do the predictions off of. Was that kind of a key component that you had to work around as some of the privacy issues in it?
Exactly, especially the simple data sets, as well as low volume of data sets. Because a lot of the interesting problems in machine learning involves being able to actually analyze and train using a large amount of data. But in healthcare, especially when you look at clinical trials, the number of participants or the amount of data is much smaller, right? Mm. So it's less about the traditional big data problem, but more about how to actually best utilize the limited amount of information that you have at the time to come up with a reasonable prediction. While the broader hope is that once this becomes more widely used, you will be in a position to actually have a large amount of data.
Yeah, you can feed the data back in. Instead of having servers and servers of data to start, like, you really have to use that very limited set to make some early predictions and see how they come out, right?
Very true. Exactly.
Great. I keep going.
Yeah. So while we were at Wanda, we had the opportunity to actually create a second company by the name of Ankaverse, in the oncology domain. It was a joint venture between us, Wand, and Dignity Health, which is one of the prominent healthcare systems in California. And that was focused on enabling virtual tumor boards for cancer patients. And again, down the road, trying to utilize the information that are captured in those conversations for more analytical assessment. As you pointed out, Ryan, the notion of privacy is doubly important, if not more, in healthcare. So that was its own challenges. There's HIPAA compliance and even ensuring that when dealing with a small amount of data, the privacy of the patients, even privacy of the caregivers, are properly maintained. So we worked on Wanda for 5 years in 2019. We sold the company to an entity in United Kingdom. And one of the reasons that that interested party came to our attention was because one of our main investors was based in the UK. So that's how the networking happened. After Wanda, I was quite keen to go back to a more direct-to-consumer. Things that were very important for me was areas that machine learning can play a major role in improving the product experience and serving the corresponding customers. I've been very interested in impact, and then I believe that the role at Twitter, which I will talk more about it, is an area that I am with my teammates and colleagues can be quite impactful. And that's how I joined Twitter. Twitter's notification team.
It's amazing. Yeah, it seems like an absolute kind of gold mine for being able to build tools that can help support some of these impactful changes and how much it impacts the entire world, as we're seeing.
Exactly. And that's one of the bigger appeals of Twitter. Twitter is an application. And granted, I'm biased. I work at Twitter. But I think it has repeatedly shown that it has a big impact on societies. Good and bad, there are times that Twitter as a company is trying to minimize the negative impact that it potentially can have. And something that a lot of people rely on to find conversations related to what they care about. So it's a very exciting application to try and make a contribution to.
Yeah, and I think this is an interesting point. Just in around tech leadership itself, I remember going to South by Southwest in the late 2000s when Twitter was first coming out, and it was really the golden child of that particular year of South by. And 12, 13 years later as a company, and it's got a totally different face as an organization and impact on the world. And you as a leader within that organization have to carry a lot of that on your shoulders. How does that impact you in the way that you work with teams?
So, fortunately, Twitter has been very intentional about setting clear strategies and initiatives across the company, both with the new leadership, which is under Parag, and before that, under Jack. And as a leader, the primary challenge is to ensure that we are fully aligned with the strategy in our execution, because company relies on the impact and the outcome that our teams provide. At the same time, making sure the individuals, engineers, and other cross-functional partners in the team are properly excited, motivated, and see that strategy and vision and actually share those values. Once these two come into place, more often than not, the outcomes are what is expected of us.
How much time do you spend working with teams to make sure that they are aligned with those values?
It's a continuous process, meaning it's not like at the beginning of the quarter, we try to create alignment and then start the execution. Meaning those strategies are evolving, and that's a good thing. Meaning a company like Twitter, right, we constantly are trying to learn about how these strategies are panning out, right? Even within our teams, we ensure that continuously we review what we do and how does it map to the strategy, where it deviates, and if it deviates, what is the underlying cause of the deviation, right? And go back and try both provide feedback to the upper management as well as adjust how we operate.
That makes sense. So much of machine learning happens under the hood, and there's a lot of people programming different aspects of it and trying to create a cohesive approach to it, along with in the right way so everybody's clear as to exactly what it does, I know are pretty notable challenges across projects I've been involved in. Do you feel like that's something that you have to keep working with your teams on?
Yes, is the short answer. So with machine learning projects, one of the main challenges is the uncertainty around the project itself. Usually the problem statement is a high level and vague statement, right? Meaning, let's say in the context of notification, you want to make sure that the recommended notifications are relevant to our customers, right? This is a very vague statement. Definition of relevancy, the definition of recommendation, and that's something that the team tries to basically clarify by working with product managers, cross-functional partners, user research, and also experimenting with different ideas that we have, right? Even with that, the end result is uncertain, meaning you don't know that the model that you're trying to build at the end of the day is actually going to improve the notion of relevancy or improve the experience of the users of Twitter. And the way that we deal with this is by now, this is part of the operational culture, meaning that we know we are dealing with uncertain situations, right? And therefore, as we lay out our approaches or as we lay out our roadmap, we try to create a healthy balance, by some definition of healthy, of a portfolio that is a mix of more certain bets and projects that are higher risk, or we don't know exactly, experimental.
It's interesting. I was just thinking about my own career as you were talking about yours, where I've worked in a number of startups. I've also worked at a number of enterprise level organizations. And I ask people who have been through the same thing this question: do you feel like the leadership quality in those two different environments are different? Like when you were starting Wanda, how you were a leader then versus how you are a leader now, working with a much bigger team with a product that's impacting so many people?
It is very different. That is my experience for multiple reasons. One is with Wanda, the notion of leadership happened in the middle of our journey and without any specific tipping point. Meaning when you start a startup, you started with 2-3 people, right?
Right.
It's about just building a product, everybody working together. Gradually as things evolve, gradually as the company grows, suddenly I realized, okay, so the notion of leadership is becoming an important part of my role in the company, right? That came with a lot of different learnings, both painful learning as well as enjoyable ones. But with Twitter is different, right? Meaning with Twitter, I started as an engineering manager, let's say managing a team. And we already were talking about the future, its implications, and how we can get to where we are. And where we are is that I'm responsible for 4 different teams, the size of, let's say, 40, 50 people, for instance. So there were more preparedness in terms of responsibilities that's come under the umbrella of leadership compared to the startup, which was my first experience.
Yeah, that's a good description of it. Yeah, I can see how it's kind of a little bit more of a preset environment, but at the same time, like how you actually inspire people within that shifts versus the startup environment. Let's go back to your experience at Wanda for a second. There's definitely a specific leadership style at the start of a startup. But when you get to the point of exiting a startup, how much did that shift? What kind of new things did you have to look at? What were some of the challenges at that point where you're making that transition?
That's a great question. So first, as you can imagine, Ryan, almost all experiences are different in the startups, similar to what we had. But in the case of Wanda, when it started, the leadership aspect of my role was ensuring that people are properly and rightfully excited about the mission of the company and the products that we are building, celebrating every moment of success within the company and painting a clear picture as much as possible about where we are headed. As the company grew, different and new challenges that arguably are necessary but not exciting we faced, and the leadership was shifted toward making decisions and conveying those decisions with the team and trying to utilize their input and feedback for future decisions. Meaning down the road in Wanda, the team in general, not Wanda or any startup or any company, the team looks for decisions to be made by the leaders. Whereas at the beginning, it's a more collaborative, the execution mode.
And just like a discovery process.
Kind of. Exactly. And I'm not saying that this is the right way it should be. I'm simply saying this was my experience, right? I'm sure there are better ways to apply leadership skills, both at the beginning of a startup and towards the end. So that's the biggest shift that I see.
I look at where you're at now at Twitter, and it seems like your leadership is very much centered on solving a problem or solving a group of problems that are impactful in the world you're in. Similar to maybe the way you started Wanda, you came at a problem in a market, but like as a company evolves and the leadership has to evolve within the evolution of the company, you kind of shift from just solving a problem to really leading people through change, right? I mean, that's what it sounds like.
It is true. And let's say right now in Twitter, if I want to say what is the main area of my focus, it revolves around people, right? Meaning right. I don't directly solve the notification problems. My focus is around the people who are actually solving those things and the various aspect that people management, if you will, right? Because both at a startup environment or at a bigger company like Twitter, at the end of the day, the biggest asset that the leader has is his people. And that's why I strongly believe that one of the primary focuses of a leader or a manager should be their team, their people, and their well-being across the board, right? And how they can be motivated to work with the common goals that the company has. If that is in place, which is a big if, it's not trivial at all, I think the problems that needs to be solved on the product and technical side will be much easier to deal with.
Yeah, that makes sense. Really, you are tied to the power of your team and how much you enable them. So not to be funny here, but it is like in this particular arena, you know, training humans is a lot more complex than training machines and really having to like hear all of the complexities of the human experience within going through really heavy duty periods of innovation or long nights of like getting the delivery done, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, training is one word to describe it. But in general, ensuring that people, individuals on the team and individuals that you work with aligned with the objectives that you have, aligned with the objectives of the company, are motivated, have a feel safe in their working environment, right?
Right.
Are properly yep. empowered and enabled, right? All of these things is a multidimensional, complex problem to deal with.
Yeah. And sounds like you're really getting to help guide some people through big problems that face us all. And we really appreciate the work you're doing there. Leadership is often about modeling good citizenship. For an engineering leader like Fouad, someone that is at the foundation floor. Restart. Take two. Leadership is often about modeling good citizenship. For an engineering leader like Fouad, someone that is at the foundational floor of training AI, it's even more important to shepherd a level of care for results of the products he creates. Whether he was seeking to impact the healthcare industry or looking to help facilitate expansive social conversations at Twitter, he knows it's vital to bring clarity and relevancy to the results of a problem that is almost always uncertain. All right, welcome back, everyone. We're here with Fouad today to talk about his top five leadership tips. We're excited to hear what he's got. So let's start with tip number one. What do you got for us?
Empathy. And this is something that I've learned in more recent years of my experience. But at the end of the day, as we discussed before, people that you work with, people that you serve, i.e. our users, are the biggest assets of what you do. And being able to have empathy toward them, understand where they're coming from, understand their viewpoint, is an extremely important asset for a leader to make decisions and really understand where they stand.
Yeah, to me, this is one of the most central leadership points I come across as well, because you're right. You are discovering empathy for both the customer and empathy for the team that's collaborating to pull it off, and finding that balance in there is really important. All right, let's jump to tip number two. What do you got?
It is ROI, where I is time. So we all are familiar with the ROI, which is return on investment, but here the investment is time. At the end of the day, your time is literally limited, and knowing what kind of return you're getting when you're spending time on a particular topic is very important. Otherwise, leaders can easily spend hours or days or weeks on topics, which at the end of the day, the delta between spending N days versus M days is very small. So I think it's very important for leaders to really know how much time is worth spending on the topics that they have to deal with.
Yeah, it makes sense. Do you feel like this was a learned skill for you, something you had to gain as you got further into your career? Did you come in kind of knowing this?
It was, and what helped me to learn it was feedback that I got from senior leadership, right? I mean, fortunately, we have great mentors and senior leaders at Twitter, and I've been given even explicit feedback that if you're spending more than a day on it, it means that you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, it's really easy to go in deep on something and forget that and really think about the way you place the time. Do you help guide your team and your team members to see the same thing?
Very much so. It's one of those things that when I started to become aware of it and learn to gradually get better at it, I found it very useful. And that's why I immediately start sharing it with people on my team and even with my peers and colleagues, right? At least as a concept that they should pay attention to. And also making observations on when I believe somebody is spending too much time on a topic, and then have a discussion to see maybe they can take a different approach.
That's great. All right, let's jump to tip number 3.
It's uncertainty and contradictions. I think this might sound like a self-contradictory statement, but something that is constant in leadership challenges is uncertainty and contradictions. Meaning at the end of the day, a lot of problems that we try to solve, the problem statement is not fully defined, and we are dealing with uncertain situations. And also, we find ourselves even making decisions that might look contradictory to what we did, let's say, in a different setup. But I think that's the reality of it, meaning the dimensions of the problems that we try to solve at times gets so diverse that they may require decisions that may look contradictory, but it is the best way to deal with the uncertainties around these problems.
Wow, this is a really good perspective. And I was relating to it a lot as you were talking through it. I also thought about contradictory elements, how your decisions are perceived as well. Because sometimes you have to make decisions where someone might only have a line of sight towards one aspect of it. And that might create uncertainty within those groups or within people who can't see everything. So it really applies in a variety of ways. All right, let's jump to tip number 4.
It's chronic discontent. I think for leaders, it is easy to end up focusing on what is in front of us and ensuring we do our best effort to, let's say, execute, grow, and empower folks. But it's important to also pay attention to chronic discontent and be aware of what is slowing us down, what can or should be changed, and go and try to make those changes. It is a slippery slope because making change at times can become very appealing. So the idea is not to go and find things to change, but rather be aware of things that are holding you or your team or your company back and go and change them.
What's a way in which you communicate that discontent without being too negative?
When I talk to my team or even to people that I'm hoping to join our teams, I present those as opportunities in a sense that being able to really understand what are the chronic situations that the team is operating under that can be improved with a big impact, I think it's an opportunity for folks to pay attention to and take those on.
Yeah, amazing. That's really great. All right, let's jump to your last tip. Tip number 5. What do you got for us?
So this one is the trivial one, but I think it's extremely important, and that is impact. At the end of the day, what we do has to be measured by the impact that we are making, whether that's the product that we are driving, whether efforts around hiring that we are doing, whether it's a company that we want to go and do fundraising for, right? I think it's extremely important for leaders to remember at the end of the day, impact is what matters most. And reviewing the impact that we are making on a continuous basis and ensuring what we are doing is going to actually lead or has the potential to lead to impact, I think it's very critical.
Can you describe one or two times or different ways in which you've done that?
Let me give two examples. One in Rwanda, right? Mm-hmm. In Rwanda, let's say in the middle of the journey that we had, given and startup and the excitement around doing a lot of things and our ability to move very fast, because again, we are a startup, we always had a lot of interesting problems to go after and solve. But the way we tried to choose which ones to go after, we did it based on the impact that it could make on our customers, in that case being healthcare providers. And again, we can debate whether those decisions were right or wrong. I'm simply telling you the story. But I think once we chose those based on impact, then it was very rewarding when we saw them. At the same time, we did make decisions at Rwanda, which was not based on impact, but it was based on how exciting the problem was or how great it would be to solve it. It's very cool,
right,
which has significant negative implications. We actually did a direct-to-consumer application at Rwanda targeting women's heart health, which is very exciting, but we really didn't understand what kind of impact we can make with this, and it was a failed effort, and it led to a lot of challenges. At Twitter, we always set our goals based on the impact that the projects are going to make, both quantifiable impact as well as qualitative one. And frankly, again, it's a different context, but in places that, let's say, I was not able to make an impact, right? Or the example that I briefly mentioned about that, the consumer about women's heart health, it was a big effort and a major failure. I mean, by a magnitude that I can't even begin to explain. And frankly, it came with a lot of painful learnings.
Mm. Let's keep going there for a second. How do you think the painful learnings translate back to you so that you can use them for the future?
Again, this is based on my own experience, but unfortunately, the more painful the learning is, the easier the learning points can get, right? In that particular case, some of the major learning, one was around impact, which we covered, when you really understand what kind of impact we are making. The second one, which is really painful, is how you listen to people's feedback and advice they give. See, I think everybody will agree that you need to have good mentors, advisors, talk to people, listen what they have to say. And arguably, a lot of people do that. But when there was actually manifest into a decision that you're making, I think is a big one. Meaning, back then, I used to talk to a lot of people and... But when I looked back, I said, okay, I'm listening what they're saying, but at the end of the day, I am biasing my actions toward what I wanted to do, right? Mm. And accept or dismiss people's input. I think it's very important to really put aside your own biases and try to see where the advice is coming from. What are the expertise and experiences behind their advice? And then really try to take them into account in your decision making. And not just listen to them. And this happened about that consumer app that I told you about. Like, people told me, don't do it, very explicitly. And I was like, yeah, they have a good point. But, right, that but is very dangerous that you put at the end of the statement when you're thinking for yourself.
Yeah, and we're told over and over again in the folklore of business that I was told a million times no, but I still did it and it happened. And that's not always the case. It just isn't. Yeah. A lot of times, if you have a good trusted set of advisors, you shortcut huge mistakes by actually hearing them and taking them in. And you ultimately have to make your own decisions and be responsible for what you want to do.
It is true. And this goes back to the, in my opinion, the uncertainty, right? Meaning, there are a lot of great stories about when people didn't listen to overwhelming advice that would point them to a different direction. And they were very successful. And those are great stories to learn from, right? So again, it's not like it's a rule that when 10 people tell you not to do it, don't do it. But you can still do it, but do it after really putting your biases aside for a second.
Yeah.
Analyzing the situation and then making a decision.
It is a huge part of like holding that bright light out in front of everybody and making decisions as a leader. It's central. And because whether or not people are telling you to do it, that's a tough spot sometimes because you're out in front.
Exactly.
One thing Fogg drove home over and over
is that uncertainty is one of the only true constants that leaders face. And when you're working in an environment that is constantly innovating at the edges of technology, it's vital to lead with an eye toward the impact we are making on customers, team members, and ultimately society. In the world of machine learning, the impact of the projects is an especially important consideration, considering how it affects all of our lives and will ultimately affect the forthcoming generations.